But we have an undefeated man here that his nickname is TBE, the best ever. He's a black belt in karate and a Brazilian jiu-jitsu purple belt. His name is Muhammad Waleed, and he's here with us now. Hi, Muhammad. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, guys. How are you guys?
It's a pleasure to have you on here. How tough is it to be in the MMA? Like, you know, in terms of what Garrett did, how tough would it be for a regular person to actually get in a ring and have a fight?
It's really hard, you know, and it's like about, first of all, you know, you need to have like the best condition. And not only the condition, you know, like first of all, you need to be having condition. And second of all, you need to have like conditioning is like more than 50%, I believe, because you know, it's the stress, the crowd, everyone. You know, you're not only fighting for yourself, for your career. You're fighting for your family, your team, your country. You know, and then it's like. You need to be having like training camp. It's really hard to be like an MMA fighter. And I started martial arts since I was like really young, under the legendary my father.
Your father's a master as well.
Yeah, my father is grandmaster in karate, and he have 9-degree black belt.
Wow.
Yeah, and he used to live like in Japan for 2 years.
So the normal, you know, normal kid, when they were got in trouble, they'd get the strap, and you got a roundhouse.
Well, no, no, but I used to be actually, you know, I'm a honest guy, you know, I don't like to lie. I used to be not a troublemaker, but I used to love to fight in school, so they used to kick me out from school. So every time they used to kick me out from school, I used to go to the gym, and you know, it used to be like my school for me, and I really like that, you know. And I'm looking forward for all my next fights, you know. I'm undefeated, and if I want to stay keeping, you know, the people calling me TBE, so I need to be undefeated,
man. We have another MMA fighter. It's a MMA bonanza here on Eye on Careers tonight. We have Carl, who's an ex-MMA fighter and current trainer. Carl, are you there? Hello.
I am indeed, Shane. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no, thank you so much. Can you just give us a quick rundown of your background so the audience get a feel for who you are and what you do?
Sure. Let's see. I've been training for about 9 years now. I started back in the United States, just outside of Detroit, Michigan. Yeah, I've fought plenty of fights out there, and then I underwent a few injuries, actually, and kind of fell in love with training and teaching, and I got the opportunity to come out here. And I just kind of jumped all over that opportunity and haven't looked back since. So I've been in Dubai now for about a year and a half, training at Pride Fitness Center in Al Quds, and it's been a wonderful time here. The people are excellent, and the training is very high level.
Okay, and so how tough is it to get in the ring and actually do an MMA fight?
You know, honestly, I would say the most difficult thing about it is the mental game. You know, there's plenty of athletes out there. Like, you can see the CrossFit guys, everything like that. You know, the mental game is really the biggest challenge. There's a lot of people who can perform in the gym at the highest levels when, you know, the eyes aren't on them and the pressure's not on them. But in order to walk into that cage, you really have to have yourself together mentally. It's really just a total, it's a mind game in general.
I think that's exactly what Muhammad was saying, is that, you know, the physical piece is actually not the only part that you have to train. It's the mental fortitude you need to be on stage and go through a traumatic thing like a fist fight or a face-to-face fight. Is that right, Muhammad?
Yeah, of course. There's,
I would say it's about 70% to 30%, to be honest with you. Like, I'm sure Muhammad would agree that, you know, there's plenty of guys who are really, really tough in the gym and are very, very strong.
Sorry, can you say it again?
He's saying that it's 70% mental and 30% physical.
Well, I don't think that. But it's
The guys are going to fight over it.
No, of course not.
Fight.
I cannot fight here, guys. You know, I'm not allowed to fight outside.
Yeah, you're registered as a deadly weapon, is it? When you at the police?
No. But I'm. You know,
so how much is it though? How much is it? If it's not set, how much mentally
think,
would you
I
say?
I think
percentage?
mentally, you need to be. You know, like mentally, like at the first, you know, like my I have my friends, you know. At the gym, my best friend is over here with me. He's 24 hours with me. And he's like, you know, like he print the guy picture, let's say, and the guys put it on the gym, put big X on it, you know, and he's like, you're going to kill this guy. You're going to hurt him. You're going to win, you know. We're not racist or anything, you know, but you need to do that in the gym, you know, guys. Like for me, I have 5 contracts fights more with the 1FC.
So I think what you're saying is that people should visualize their goal. You know, some people in business may create a vision board of those things they want to achieve, and you have a certain methodology. Carl, do you have something that echoes that as well on your end in terms of the visualization of success?
Absolutely. I think visualization is a huge aspect of it. And I think that every fighter is honestly motivated by different cues. You know, you have fighters that will come out of college and realize they don't want to do the business life, and then they'll end up, you know, fighting from that. You'll have guys that are a bit of troublemakers that maybe have been into a bit of the criminal past, or, you know, they get in a lot of fights outside of the cage, and then they find that an outlet where they actually have an outlet for that aggression, and they can focus that energy towards something positive like fighting, you know, in a competitive environment. But towards the aspect of visualization, I think that's huge. You need to visualize your opponent, and you need to find out what drives you. For him, it's actually the person who's in front of him. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, he needs to get aggressive towards that person. Some people are fighting themselves, to be honest with you. When you get in there, a lot of times your biggest opponent is yourself. Some guys, I've trained a lot of the guys, and even fellas in the UFC, where their biggest opponent is literally themselves. They psych themselves out so much. But when they get in there, it all comes out in a positive form. So I think visualization is absolutely a huge point of it.
Just jumping in here, Tony McRae, the executive vice president of United Arab Bank, one of the HR gurus of the region, and also heads the HR function for United Arab Bank. Tony, you're flagging me here that you wanted to jump in, so please.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Is the mic on there?
Yeah,
great.
There you go.
Great. Now, just interested in the kind of balance between the mind and the physical and the conditioning that Waleed was talking about, and the question for me is when you actually get in the ring, and there's massive preparation, there's massive conditioning, which is both mental and physical, but when you're in that ring, essentially you don't have time to think. As I perceive it, you know, watching these fights.
I was going to say, are you an MMA fighter as well? Like, or you just fight, you know?
huge interest. And
a lot of tough guys on the show tonight. So.
And it's to me, it's instinct. It's that very, very quick execution within the ring where you really don't have time. You don't have a second to ponder. You've got to see the gaps. You've got to take those gaps at high speed. You got to work on instinct.
Is that the same in business, though? Because you don't have a moment.
Yeah. It can be. I think the speed when you're in that ring is different. And that's why my question to Willie, the conditioning. You know, it's less mental when you're in there. I reckon to get in there, yes, but once you're in there, you know.
Sure.
In the animal kingdom.
Hold on. I think Muhammad wanted to say something. He's patiently waiting there because I think Muhammad, you were saying about the fighting yourself in the ring. You had a point of it.
That's like big thing. You know, you need to start doing that while you're training. You know, you need to put this pressure, the competition or a tournament pressure. You know, while you're training. Like you can, when I fight 3 rounds, I don't train 3 rounds. I train 5 rounds, 5 minutes. And when I fight 5 rounds, let's say, I train 7-8 rounds, 5 minutes. And that's like I'm training, like that's like I'm just saying that's for the sparring season. And the sparring season is really like high. The MMA fighters, they only know about it. Don't like, I'm not meaning anything, but you know, like, okay, like if you can come and see, like, to compete in MMA, you know, it's going to be like really hard. Like training, your food, you know, you're away from family, training camp, a lot of pressure. And then you're like, you're going to be starting after that, you know, having the other thing that it is like, let's say, like, after your, like, training camp, you go fight. After the fight, you need to be having, like, a good, good, like, vacation, let's say. And that's the important thing. That's really, like, important for me, as me, you know, I always say, you know, whenever, you know, you go train. And whenever you want to have fun, you can have fun. But in training, you cannot have fun. You're always going to train there, and you get, like aggressive in training. Train hard, win easy.
Sorry, so Carl, the last point here before we have to go. So what were you saying?
I would fully agree with Muhammad in the fact that you do need to attempt to mimic the pressure of the actual event as much as you can in training. I'm sure he does the same thing that most professional athletes do as far as, you know, having a Shark Tank sparring system where you're receiving a fresh opponent maybe every minute for those 5 or 10 rounds that he's sparring for. To allude to the point earlier of the mental and the physical, you know, yes, it's very true that when you're in there, you don't have time to think and you don't have time to create those reactions. But the mental subconscious mind is what takes over. So in aspect, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, the mental aspect is just preparation. There is a lot of mental preparation in there. And the guys at the highest levels, they can slow the fight down. They can make adjustments mid-fight. Maybe you go into a fight with a game plan of, I'm going to take this guy down and submit him. But his takedown defense is excellent, so you have to change your game plan up mid-fight.
Ground him and pound him. Carl,
exactly.
Thank you so much for your time. Hopefully we can have you on the show again sometime soon, but I think some great points there. Thanks so much for calling into the show tonight.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
So this is we have to take a short break here, but coming up we're going to hear about a man who was 5'350", basically cheated death. The doctors told him he was going to die. He was so out of shape he couldn't walk, and he basically turned his life around. We're going to hear from him. His name's Arthur Berman in just a minute, so stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And for those of you just joining us, we just heard the story of Garrett G. Money Holov, who is a young man who wanted to be an MMA fighter. And he achieved his goal. His fight was actually covered by ESPN. The catch was that he has rheumatoid arthritis and Down syndrome, which for most people would be a debilitating challenge, but not for Garrett Holov. Not only has he become an MMA fighter, he has also has his own gym now and is an MMA instructor. You can find out more about him if you missed that segment on our website, DubaiI1038.com/eye on careers. And coming up, we are going to just listen to a story of a man who was 5'350". He could not walk unassisted. The doctor said he would never walk unassisted again for the rest of his life. They also said that within 36 months, he was going to have a heart attack and die. Most of the gyms, when he went in, they wouldn't let him come in because he was such a health risk. And they said, you can't even work out here. He was so out of shape, he couldn't even work out. And we called him up. And let's listen to that right here. It's an amazing story. Mr. Arthur Berman, welcome to Eye on Careers. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
I understand you've gone through quite a transformation. Can you just, for the audience and for people just joining us now, describe what your situation was like before you met Diamond Dallas Page?
Well, I was morbidly obese. I was beyond that. I'm just over 5 foot tall, and I weighed about 340 pounds.
Wow, that's really big.
And I could not walk or stand unassisted.
Wow.
In the 90s, in the first Persian Gulf War, I was slightly injured. It was a mild injury, but it made it hard for me to move around. And I basically just did not take care of myself. I made some bad decisions. I did not take care of myself properly, and I gained a very, very large amount of weight, obviously.
really jeopardized my health. It was having a negative impact on almost every single aspect of my life. Like I was saying, I'd made some really bad choices there. One of the things that really made the situation worse was my own attitude about it. I mean, I had given up pretty much. I had said that, you know, to myself that this was not something I was going to be able to fix. I'd been told that I had reached a point where things were simply not going to get better. And I decided that I was going to believe that. I ended up using it almost as an excuse not to try. I mean, hey, I had a doctor tell me it wasn't going to get better. You know, that's about as definite as you can get. But the reality is, you know, the doctor never told me to go out and eat everything in the world. The doctor never told me to, you know, to pig myself the way I did. I did that. Those were my choices, and they were bad choices. And I say this because it's really important that I own the bad choices, because if I don't own the bad choices, then I don't own the good choices either. You know, this wasn't something that happened to me. This was something I did to myself. And because of that, I had to be the one to undo it, if that makes sense.
Right, and I think some of the doctors actually think you would probably be dead within 12 or 24 months, where they, I think it was a pretty severe...
Not that short. I was told that I probably wouldn't live to see 50.
Okay, and how old were you at the time?
Nobody gave me a two-year time frame.
But you were 47 when they gave you that information.
I was 47.
Okay, so...
They told me I probably wouldn't live to see 50 at my weight and my height. They said it basically... someone used the phrase heart attack waiting to happen.
Wow. So what is it that maybe just dissuaded you from achieving your goal, or what was it that was the tipping point for you that allowed you to break free of this?
Pain.
You're in pain every day and you just couldn't take it anymore.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I was prepared to accept that I was going to die. I totally accepted my own mortality. I had accepted that I would not live. But just the indignity of my own pain, you know, drove me to seek out something. I'll be really honest, I did not come to yoga looking for a healing. I did not come to, you know, I did not find Dallas Page because I was looking to be healed. I went there because I was looking for some kind of pain management. I did not expect to lose the weight. I never thought that would happen. I was looking for a way to manage the pain that I was in.
And do you think that's why, you know, many people don't go and chase their goals or their dreams? Because they actually believe that it's impossible for them to achieve it. Like, you actually thought it was impossible to lose weight.
I did. I thought it was impossible. I'd been told that I was not going to get better.
And when a doctor tells you that, that's... Sorry.
Too far. You know, I weighed too much to work out. I weighed too much to walk around, to do any of... Yeah, I was too heavy to do even the mildest exercises. I actually went to a yoga studio, and they turned me away.
What do you mean they turned you away?
They said no.
What, like they're not allowed to have obese people in the class?
I couldn't stand or walk or even sit upright for, you know, prolonged periods on my own. I had no muscle tone at all. I was too heavy. They had no one there who knew how to even start to help me.
Wow. And what is your physical condition like now?
I'm 170 pounds. I teach several yoga classes a week, in addition to working full-time as a special education teacher.
Well, that was just a clip from my call with Arthur Berman. But, you know, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you are feeling challenged, or you feeling that you're, you know, overwhelmed by what you're trying to achieve, I hope, you know, that was an example of that. Once you put your mind to something and you never give up, that you can move mountains. I don't know, Tony, what do you think of that clip?
Yeah, no. The key there, I think, Shane, you talked about bad choices, and clearly there were some real bad choices, and he's moved mountains mentally and physically to get to where he's at. And I think it comes back to my initial point when one looks at top performers. I'm completely related, and Mohammed's been bouncing around the studio because he's keen to get to the big party in Dubai, but he showed the key point being self-control, and that's what it's about. And I think all the research will indicate that it's all about self-control, self-restraint.
Well, I think what you meant is that, you know, he's been through a lot of training there. And what it is that he's, you know, taking some time off now to relax, because you can't just, like he said, you can't just be on 24/7, right, Mohammed?
Yeah.
By the way, that party was a joke. We here committed to the station for a good while. So Mohammed's behaving himself indeed.
Of course, man.
Yeah, so Mohammed, what do you think of the clip, Arthur Burman? You know, what I liked about it is the guy was in such bad shape, they wouldn't even let him in a workout studio, and the guy came around and turned it around to the point where he couldn't walk, and when you watch him on the YouTube video, he's actually sprinting across the park.
He's a hero, man. He's a hero. He's a true hero, really. Like, I'm going to really be, if he came to my gym, of course, I'm going to help him. Because I would love to help this kind of people, you know, like the kind of guys like I have in my father's gym. My father owns a gym, and in my father's gyms, you know, like when the people enter in a bad shape and I see them like having a good shape, like I have a couple of guys that they enter the gym, they're around 145 kg, and they after 7-8 months they're like 75 kg, and they're like just like an amazing.
What's been the biggest challenge you've ever faced in your life, Mohammed?
For me, the biggest challenge. Well,
your darkest moment. Was there ever a moment you didn't think you would pull through?
Well, I have nothing. Nothing is impossible for me. Because I'm training, you know, like hard. And, you know, like, but as I say, you know, like, there is nothing impossible for me. I whatever I have in front of me, I'm gonna do it.
What, you know, you're in many stretches an Emirati hero. You're undefeated. What's any message, advice you would have for any young Emiratis out there who have a dream and want to chase it?
Well, I would love to see a lot of Emirati people, you know, like training, like you have now Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed in Abu Dhabi. He put the schedule of the Jiu-Jitsu kids in Abu Dhabi. That's a massive big step of sportsmen. Sportsmanship in Abu Dhabi, like you can see like the jiu-jitsu is in all the schools in UAE, and if you go there you will see like massive of like kids training jiu-jitsu, more around like 30,000 kids in schools, they're training it. It's like the sports class for them is like jiu-jitsu, and they will be like having a lot of like jiu-jitsu coaches, jiu-jitsu fighters there. You can see like the small kids like going fighting in the world professional championships, and that's just like amazing.
Well, coming up, we are going to hear another tidbit from Arthur Burman as he gives his advice on how to achieve anything in your life. So stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. For those of you just joining us, we first heard the story of Garrett G. Money Holov, a man with Down syndrome who continued to go on and become a professional MMA fighter. He had rheumatoid arthritis and had to get his knee drained 3 or 4 times in the last 4 months, but he continues to plow on. If that wasn't inspirational enough, we're in the middle of talking to Arthur Burman, a man who is 5 feet tall and 350 pounds. The doctors gave him 3 years to live at age 47. 10 months later, he lost 180 pounds and became a yoga instructor. Today, he can do headstands. He can do the splits. He is amazing. He is going to give us a little insight into how to achieve anything in your life. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Well, one of the things, you know, when you're looking at your story is that it's about self-belief, and the fact that you have other people believing in you is sometimes the seed and the beginning of the journey. And I know in your video you said you ended the video actually by thanking Diamond Dallas Page for believing in you.
Yes. Very few people believed in me. The VA, most of the people I knew pretty much thought it's not going to happen, it's not going to work. I mean, for one thing, they'd seen me try and fail before. Everybody knows about people who have tried to do things and failed. And I'm one of them. I tried many times, and I failed many times. Failure is a powerful teacher, if you let it be. Your failure and other people's failures. I mean, at one level, it's not an absolute. It's not an absolute. If you find someone who says they have never failed at anything ever, you're going to find somebody, either they're lying to you, they're deluding themselves, or else if you actually have someone who's never failed, then they've never really tried anything. They've never taken any risk.
So would
I have failed at so many things throughout my life. I'm not proud of that, but I'm not ashamed of it either, because it's, again, it's a reality. If I deny my failures, then I must deny my successes as well.
So in essence, the fact that you had failed so many times before was actually the stepping stone to your success.
I think so. I knew at a certain level that I had to make it work, that if I didn't make it work, that was it. It was over. And I don't just mean that I was going to die, but I mean that I was going to die without dignity, without any kind of grace, and that my death would communicate a message of utter futility to my sons, my boys. You know, like any other parent in the world, I love my children. I would not want to communicate to them the message, you know, when I die, that I died because I stuffed myself, because I cared more about eating than I cared about them. That's not what I believe, but that's what I was saying. It's what my actions were doing.
Great. So what is your advice to anybody who has a dream, or maybe they don't have a dream, but they have a goal and about achieving that goal or dream and making it happen? What would your advice to them be?
There are a handful of things I've learned in these last few years. And there's nothing here that's really brilliant, but it's true. You have a goal that means something to you. You hang on to that goal. After observation and reason, you may need to change how you're going about it, but that doesn't mean you have to give up on it.
But what would be, you know, your final words to leave us with for all your fans out there and for all the people you've already inspired? What would your final words for us be?
Well, let me go twofold. First, on a very pure physical level, if you want to get healthier again, the program that I follow is called DDP Yoga. There is a website. You can find it on the internet. It worked for me. I know lots of people that it's worked for, lots of people that it's helped. I personally recommend it without reservation. So that's one thing I'd like to say. On the other side of it, if you are willing to put yourself out there and own the process, if it is what you believe in so totally that you go to the mat for it, then go out, own it, do it, make it happen. Don't expect that you're going to, what is that phrase, law of attraction, manifest this or that into your life. That doesn't work. No one ever drowned in their own sweat. Success is hard work. It's heartbreaking work sometimes, but it's worth it. The only real success isn't what somebody gives to you. It's what you create yourself. We're unique. We're not only the artist, we're also our own raw material. And that's an amazing journey to be on.
Well, Arthur, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. And hopefully you can be on our show again if it's at all possible. And I just want to thank you for taking the time. And thank you for having the courage to share your journey on YouTube. with us. What's the, if somebody wanted to see it, would they just type in Arthur Berman, I guess, in the YouTube?
Arthur Never Give Up.
Arthur Never Give Up. And
Never Give Up.
And your video will come up.
Yes, sir.
Great. Well, thanks again, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Well, I really love his video. Actually, I've watched his video I don't know how many times, but it definitely is inspirational, and you can definitely find it. For anyone who's just joining us and wanted to get more of that, you can visit our website at dubaii1038.com/iOnCareers. Again, the best part of the show is it's interactive. So if you had a question or you had a challenge, and I can see that quite a few people are coming in now. I love his quote when he said, you know, we're not only artists, we're the raw material as well, and no one's ever drowned in their own sweat. I don't know, what did you guys think of Arthur?
Never ever give up. Eh? And I think that was Churchill from the Second World War. Never ever give up. And he was down and out a couple of times and came back.
Well, I think there's some interesting verbiage in that quote where he says, you know, we'll fight him on the hills, we'll fight him in the streets, we'll fight him in the sky. Mm. But this is the line where he says, we'll never give in to the overwhelming might of the enemy. And that right there, that verbiage speaks volumes that he was scared of the Nazi war machine, that this was an overbearing, larger, more powerful adversary. But never give in, no matter how overbearing your goal seems. I think that's quite an interesting quote from, and one of probably the most famous as well.
Yeah.
Muhammad, what about you? Have you ever drowned in your own sweat? Well, I like the part though when he talks about self-belief, that it wasn't until someone first believed in him that he actually started to believe in himself. And I think maybe, Muhammad, you got a leg up on this because you were born into this business. Your dad automatically would have believed that you should be a good fighter.
Exactly. It's like about, you know, like my father, he put me into, you know, like martial arts since I was like really kid, like 2 years old. You know, I used to go with to the gym, you know, with the pompers, and he's like, you know, putting me training there. So it's like it's running in like our family blood. You know, I have my big brother, he's an MMA fighter. And he's 2-0. He's undefeated. I have my small brother. He's like 5 years old, and he's like training. We changed his belt, and he's training hard. You know, and my goal is like, you know, always like to build. And not only me. You know, I have my team, and it's called Waleed Brothers. It's me and my big brother team. So we want to like to give it. You know, more. More like for everyone in a martial arts, and it's like as the guy say, you know, the guy, I really give him a lot of respect. You know, he was like 300 pound. You know, like that's a lot, and it's no pain, no gain, man. No as pain, Mr. No gain, Mike said,
we're heading into the into a short break here. Did you want to say? I think you want to say something to your team, Muhammad.
Yeah, I want to really like thanks everyone who came to support me. You know. I want to kind of thank my head coach, Alex Paz, and my big brother, of course. He's my manager and my training partner at the same time. I want to thank all my training partners and the whole team who came to Dubai, and they supported me, you know, and all my fans, of course. And I want to thank ONE FC, of course, the biggest MMA in Asia, you know. They even, they're better than anyone in the Asia. They're the top. And I'm looking forward for all my next fight in ONE FC, and that's I don't know where is my next fight is gonna be. So of course, and of course, I want to thank Dubai Eye guys. Really, guys, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Muhammad, for coming out, and it was great having you on. Hopefully, we can have you on again sometime
soon.